Kane is in the building.
Weather's getting nicer, basketball season's heating up, baseball's around the corner. You know what that means. It's time to win some cash. OP Sportsbook launches in late spring and will provide a fully encrypted and anonymous betting platform where users will bet with stable cryptocurrency. This means that they can place bets with crypto without having to worry about the volatility of crypto. Powered by the Solana blockchain and Web3 technology, opsportsbook.com represents the future of sports betting. 3Pete is proud to partner with them, and always remember to bet responsibly. That's opsportsbook.com. Hello, and welcome back to another 3Pete podcast, season 5, episode 16. I'm your host, Josh Romowitz, and once again, joining me is my other co-host,
Alex Castle.
And once again, filling in for Stevie, we got TJ, the man of many hats. TJ, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Got another great show planned for you guys. We're not going to talk the draft this week. There's a lot to talk about, but next week we've got a special guest, Joe Rubeck, LPG, Giants super fan, joining us. We're very excited to have him back on. So next week is going to be a very draft heavy show. A lot of Giants talk, whether it's good or bad, depends who you root for, and you'll make that call. But there's a lot of playoffs that we need to discuss. We got some hockey. We got some NBA. Yankees heating up. So a lot of good things to talk about right now. Unless if you're TJ and you're a Bruins fan, then not so great right now, but there's still a lot of playoffs to be played for them. But starting off, I want to talk about some hoops. We're in the second round. Two games have been played. We've got the Celtics Bucks 1-1. We've got Philly Miami 2-0 Miami. Golden State Memphis, I believe that is 1, that's 1-1, and Phoenix Dallas, that's 2-0 Phoenix. So the two number 1 seeds are up 2-0, and then the two seeds are tied 1-1. So some nice balance going on in the NBA. Everyone kind of expected Philly, expected Miami and Phoenix to win those series fairly easily. But then the Boston series and the Golden State series, that has the distance to be a very long series. And it's shaping out that way. But TJ, I'm going to start with you since you're a Boston fan. Your Celtics beat up on my Nets in 4 games, so they had a nice little break. But now they're facing the reigning champs, the Milwaukee Bucks. And through the first 2 games, the first game was pretty brutal, but game 2 looked a lot better for the Celtics. And it looked a lot like what the Nets saw in the 4 games that the two teams met. Saw the competitiveness, the tough, gritty defense, the grit and grind Celtics that you're used to, Boston's used to. And all thanks to Jaylen Brown's 30 piece that he dropped fairly quickly in the game. So what impressed you most about that Celtics victory in game 2 without Marcus Smart, the anchor of the defense, playing?
Like what impressed me the most was that the team just did a complete 360 from getting destroyed in game 1. It was a really poor showing offensively, defensively. It was kind of like that shell shock kind of factor of, all right, we just got smacked by the reigning champs. And I just love that even without Marcus Smart, they turned it around and showed the Bucks who the Celtics really are. And they showed them that team that steamrolled the Nets in 4 games. They put up 65 at half. They were up 25 at half, I believe, and they kept that momentum going up until the 4th, things got a little sloppy, which is what we've seen. You saw that in the Nets series. The Celtics really couldn't finish in the fourth, and they just let it get close. If I remember correctly, yeah. They let it get close a little bit in the halfway in the fourth quarter, and then they paved the way and pulled away and came out on top. So like my thing is like they just turned it around and they proved to the Bucks that it's not gonna be an easy series for them. It's not gonna be an easy series for the Celtics facing the Bucks. So I think it's gonna go seven. That's just an early prediction.
Honestly, I would love that. I would love that if it goes seven, because the first two games have been very enjoyable. And I mean, I'm sure you think otherwise, especially with game one, but the first two games have been very enjoyable because it's been two very different basketball games. It looked like the first game, Giannis kind of took over. Even though he didn't shoot the ball well, he still took over every aspect of the game. But the second game, we saw the Celtics put on their big boy pants, and we saw Al Horford, Grant Williams pretty much lock down Giannis. Yeah, he'll get his points, but they made him work for those points. Had a very poor shooting performance. Still scored 28, but 6 turnovers. No one else really got in the rhythm. So, you had Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum both dropping 30, which, whenever that happens, that's winning basketball for the Celtics when those two guys are on. Castle, I'm going to turn to you now. We've talked a lot about the Celtics defense being their key so far this season, but there's been a lot of inconsistency with their scoring from other guys not named Jason Tatum. Like Jaylen Brown, for example, struggled heavily in game one, which might have been a factor in their game one loss. What does Boston need to do to close out the series now heading back to Milwaukee for games 3 and 4?
Well, one of the things that you point out is the inconsistencies with offense. You know, as great of a player as Tatum is, he when you're going up against a team like Milwaukee, it can't fall on him. So I think a key for Boston to close out the series is to work the best rotations that can, I guess, in a way, balance them a little better, you know, because we know how great of a defensive team they are. But it's those extra points in the second half that's really going to do it. And I think it's giving guys more minutes. And a guy that I think we might be seeing get some more time, he's a guy that I really appreciated in college, and I really liked what I saw from him in the Nets series, is Peyton Pritchard. I mean, he's just a great spark to come off the bench for this Boston team. So I think giving a guy like him more time is going to be very, very beneficial. You know, I think even some of the bigger guys, you know, guys that, yeah, aren't really the bigger scorers on the team, but you know, can crash the boards well. I think if a guy like Tice maybe were to step up a little bit more, you know, we've seen what he can do offensively in the past. So he could kind of be one of those underrated guys that can step up and really get Boston those points. But I think that's the key, is just balance rotations. And because if their offensive game is shot, you know, as we know, you can't be one-sided in basketball, especially in the playoffs. You know, the defense can only carry you so far. So I think that's really the key, is, you know, kind of experimenting with some of these bench guys, you know, giving them more minutes, maybe giving them that spark that kind of, you know, lights a fire in the offense. And especially in someone like Jaylen Brown, who we know is very capable of dropping X amount of points in a night. That's what I think Boston really needs to do, because they're my favorite to make it out of the East. And this, you know, this is a big test for them. And it's also a test for their coach too. You know, he's got to step up to the plate. What's he really capable of doing in crunch time? So to come full circle from all of that I just threw out there, I think balance of the rotations and giving guys more minutes.
I like that you the two names you threw out, and I'm going to pass this to TJ in a second. But to piggyback off what you said, Peyton Pritchard is instant offense when he is played. Just watching him play in this Nets series and the few minutes that he does get in this series, seems like whenever he goes in, he's guaranteed to make one or two threes, but he's only getting like at most 10 minutes a night. So if he can get maybe, let's say, 15 minutes a night, then he might be able to score like 2 to 3 threes a night and dish the ball out for guys like Smart and Brown and Tatum to get more shots. And I like that you said Tice, and I think he's very important in this series. And along with Al Horford, because they're going up against a very, very big team. No Chris Middleton. The Bucks have basically three big men playing at all times. Giannis, Bobby Portis, and Brook Lopez. All guys who could also stretch the floor. And Boston has that to match. But they just need to play big. And Daniel Tice is a very physical guy who also fouls a lot. So if he can stay out of foul trouble, he's a big part of this of the Celtics rotation. And now TJ, it might be tough to name someone else if possible. If you can, name someone else that we haven't talked about that you think is like an underrated guy that you think could step up in the next two games heading back to Milwaukee.
I think that's easy, and that's Robert Williams.
The Time Lord.
Exactly. We've seen him transform into the player that we expected him to be and then some this season. And right now in the playoffs, he's coming off that knee injury. He played in game four. Thank you. And he's slowly but surely getting back to his form, and I know what he's capable of. We Celtics fans know what he's capable of. Ime Udoka knows what he's capable of. I'm ready to see him join in that conversation with Grant Williams and Al Horford and the other guys that have been locking down Giannis so far this season, making his points really, really tough to get.
I love that you said that right away with no hesitation. That was very impressive. And I'm really, really happy you said that, because it just piggybacks off of what I said about someone like Al Horford needing to step up more just because they're playing a massive team. And Robert Williams, while he might be a little undersized against a guy like Giannis, I'll be honest, he might be the best defensive big man in the NBA right now, because he blocks everything. It doesn't matter if you're Ja Morant or Kevin Durant, he's blocking your shot. No ifs, ands, or buts. He's a beast, and the Celtics need that. And then you have Al Horford, who looks like he's aging like fine wine. You can't move him out of the paint. So if he could play physical with Giannis, that's going to cause some misfits for them.
Oh yeah, and I agree. And I love that you said that Al Horford's aging like fine wine, because
considering he was out of the league 2 years ago, basically bought out by a rebuilding team to now being a crucial part of the two seeded Celtics. That's aging like fine wine if I've ever seen it.
Yeah, and I think the young defensive core, like that whole mentality around a vet like Al Horford is making him feel like in his prime again. And we haven't seen this like level of Al Horford since I don't know when. Like it's been a pretty long time since
Atlanta days.
Like this consistently night in and night out. And I love what I'm seeing from him. And he's just one of those guys, like you had said, that can step up even more and make it even more of a problem for Giannis and the rest of the big men on that team.
And before we move on to talk about some other games, I do think, though, Boston needs to get more out of Jaylen Brown. It was great what he did in game two, But he's not, I'm not expecting him to score 30 every single game. But game one, I think he only scored, what, 10 or 12 points? If your second guy is only producing that, it's going to be hard to win a playoff game. 12 points, yeah. He needs to score at least 20 because Tatum, you expect to score at least 25 to 30. Jaylen Brown's got to score somewhere around 20 to give the Celtics a winning shot, considering they also have a small rotation. They only play like 8 guys. So Jaylen Brown's going to be on the court for 38, 40 minutes. He's got to score at least 20 points for the Celtics to win.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And like he can be used a lot more. And I know he can produce a lot more offensively, especially with, again, how they move the ball offensively, getting their shooters open, whoever they have on the floor. And I agree with you that he's got to step it up and produce at least 18 points, if not more than that, to help at least boost the offense and have it not be such like a lopsided offensive production, if you will.
Shifting gears to another star who needs to step up. Have you guys seen what's been going on in Philly lately?
Of course, Jim Ooh. Harden, baby.
Ooh, that. I'm kind of at a loss of words for multiple reasons, because while James Harden, his better days are definitely far behind him, it's looked like there's been an opening for another one to kind of overtake him, if that makes sense. Because James Harden, the past two games, has had no Embiid, and the Sixers have just gotten blown out, which everyone's kind of expected. The Heat are up 2-0. Now they're going back to Philly. Embiid is in concussion protocol and he has a fractured eye or whatever. And then Harden was expected to be the guy, and they brought him in to be the guy behind Embiid. But now, without Embiid, it looks like Harden's kind of been their third guy, because Tyrese Maxey has kind of taken on that role to be the guy. Tobias Harris has played very well and is scoring very well. The missing piece is James Harden right now, which this time last year would be very shocking to many folks around basketball if you said that James Harden would be a reason why your team is losing in the playoffs. And if I'm a Philly fan, I'm very worried, because he's due for a big payday to be the highest paid player in NBA history at almost $50 million a year. I personally don't think he's worth it, and I don't think neither one of you two as well. Yeah, you're both shaking your head now. What's the move for Philly? Cass, I'm going to start with you. You make this trade, you get rid of your depth, and you get rid of Ben Simmons, which was obvious that was going to happen. Do you feel obligated to now extend James Harden, or do you say, screw that, I'm going to put my foot down, I don't care that we traded away all these assets. We want to win, and we know what we have in Tyrese Maxey. We could build a winning team around him and Embiid. So I'm going to start with you, Castle.
You know, I didn't really have much of an opinion about Harden. As a player, as a person, I admire, you know, I liked watching him play. He's a great offensive player. But I really started to get a closer look at him during his time with the Nets and the trade. And you guys can feel free to disagree. Correct me if I'm wrong. I flat out think he has lost his passion for the game of basketball. I look at a guy who's going out on the court, who's just playing the game to make the money and fill the spot, and that's it. And it's pathetic. I mean, look, I don't like Philly sports at all. Can't stand Philly sports. Sorry, Philly fans, but, you know, come talk to me later about it. But I think the move for Philly is to get rid of Harden and work with the pieces that you have. Maxi, I love watching Maxi play. He's a young guy. He's so exciting. That's who me and other Knicks fans hope to see quickly become one day. You got Tybull. You got, I'm drawing a blank.
Tobias Harris, Danny Green.
Tobias Harris. You got the pieces to work with. And you got Jim Harden just dragging along the court. Just, you know, it's – if I'm Philly – whether I win or lose this series, I really look at Harden's value and what he brings to the future of the organization, because frankly, I think if they keep him, they're just overpaying dead weight. Flat out, that's what I see it.
So would you say that this is about to be like what we're about to see this offseason with Russell Westbrook, where we saw this year was a complete failure? And the Lakers are now dealing with this dead weight where they really can't move on from Russell Westbrook. And you think that could kind of be the exact same scenario with Philly if they extend him?
It's possibly. See, the thing with Russell Westbrook, and no disrespect to him, because I think he's a great player, and you look at what he's done throughout his career. During our time, if not the number one guy, he's one of the best guys when it comes to producing the triple-double in the stat line. So I think Westbrook's faded. So that's why I think it's harder. I think that if Philly decides not to extend Harden, I don't think it'll be difficult, because I'm sure there's going to be a team that'll look at the situation differently and think that if Harden moves to another location, that he'll play better. It's a dangerous game for Philly to extend him. I mean, they extend him to what you said, $50 million a year, and this is what he produces. Philly's just going to be in this endless loop of being a top team in the East and then flatlining in the playoffs, because the highest paid player in the league is putting up rec league numbers. So I think Philly's in a very tough situation, but if they don't decide to extend him, I don't think it'll be that difficult to move him.
That I need a second to digest all of that. That was bold, and I like it, because look, I've dealt with Harden in the past year and a half, and I've seen what he's like and what he's capable of. There are flashes of greatness, yes, but there's just so much inconsistency. I want, like, going back to what you said, it could be the lack of passion. It could just be that he is never going to recover from a hamstring injury, and he just doesn't have that step on defenders he's used to. It could be that the league changed their ruling about drawing fouls, which is a huge disadvantage for Harden, because that was how he was so successful for almost a decade. So all of these factor into it. Ultimately, I think Philly will extend him, just because they traded away all their pieces, that they would basically be waving the white flag if they don't extend Harden, because then they just accept the defeat and will deal with the consequences that are no draft value, no depth, but at least they got Harden out of it, which I don't think it's the right strategy, and neither do you, but I think that's ultimately what's going to happen. But that's their problem, not ours. We don't like Philly.
We're New York fans. We suffer differently.
We've suffered for way too long. But before we end this basketball segment and move on to TJ's specialty, I want to pose a question for each of you. We'll start with TJ. Out of all the guys remaining in the playoffs, so strictly playoffs, who's the most underappreciated? It could be a star, it could be superstar, it could be a role player. It doesn't matter. Who's the most underappreciated player remaining in the playoffs?
It's funny that you asked, because we were talking about this last night, and I feel like I took your initial pick, and so I thought about it, and like, I do want to say Devin Booker, because like,
by all means, he's all yours.
Yeah, because like, we saw how the Suns performed without him in the series against the Pelicans. If correct me if I'm wrong, it's the Pelicans gave them a run for their money and took them to six games. And just, we saw CP3 take over, which is not uncommon to see that. But just with the addition of Devin Booker, like, they're a really efficient offense with him. He can shoot, he can move, he can pass the ball. And on defense, he's emerging as a pretty top defender for his age and for his position. And I just think a lot of people haven't given him the credit in this postseason, but let alone like in years past. I remember when he dropped 80 some odd points on the Celtics about 5-6 years back. And that was incredible. I feel like people forget that sometimes, but it's a good reminder of like something to look back on, at how effective and efficient Devin Booker can A, move the ball, and B, score.
He's one of the most efficient scorers that we have in the NBA, because it seems like he doesn't need a lot of shots to score that many points. And we've seen in this series already, in game two, where he scored 30 points, it seemed like he only took a couple shots and boom, he already has 30 points. It makes it look so easy and effortless when he shoots. It looks like every shot he takes goes in. He's got the deep range from three. He's got the quickness to drive into the lane. Everything about his game is just fun to watch. And he's also improved on defense. He's taken the challenge of guarding Luka Doncic on some possessions, and he's holding his own and making Luka work for his shots. So he was definitely one of my top picks for most underrated. So I can't fault you for saying Devin Booker. If you didn't, I would.
Yeah, so now I'm really interested to see what you have to say after Castle.
I'm going to have to make you wait. Yeah, Castle, I'm going to let you go.
I'm excited. I can't wait.
I'm trying to think about this. You know, I can't really think of anyone who is underrated or not appreciated enough. But a guy that I'm going to throw out there is, okay, here's one guy that I'm thinking of that I don't know how, I mean, I've seen him play in a couple of games with this team, and I feel like because of what their front court is like and what he is capable of, that he gives them an extra step. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right. Is his last name is Kleber, the guy on Dallas? He's a guy. Now, when I look at Dallas, beyond Luka and Dinwiddie, they got good guys on the team, but there's no one in there. You know, we were talking about earlier about you know, the Bucks and the Celtics. They got guys in their front court that they got work with, and it's one of their big strengths. And even some of these other teams too. I mean, so when I look at Dallas, their strength is in their guards. But then you have a guy like Kleber, who he's big, he can play in the front. I believe he can shoot the ball. I mean, I've seen him make some shots before. So I feel like he's a guy that his name is thrown around when it comes to Dallas, but he's not a name that's focused on more. And I think, you know, it's so hard to evaluate the team without talking about Luka a whole lot. But that's a guy who I think people should give a little more of a look and look into what he's doing with this Dallas team. I don't know if he fits the bill, but that's a name that came to mind.
Hell of a pick. I love it. He made 8 threes in game 4 against Utah last series off the bench. Now, 8 threes for anyone, I guess, not named Steph Curry, even though if it were Steph Curry, it'd still be very impressive. 8 threes, and I believe there were 8 consecutive three-pointers made. Is ridiculous. So he's a sniper. And like you said, Dallas doesn't really have the front court depth. And he's not the strongest or the biggest guy, but his two-way ability just gives him this opportunity to play and stretch the floor to make life easier for Luka and Brunson and Dinwiddie. So great pick. Great pick, Castle. And now mine. I really did want to say Devin Booker, but when I think about most underrated, there's only two names that came to mind. And it was Devin Booker, one, and Tyler Hero, number two. And now I've kind of been big on Tyler Hero the last couple of years since he got drafted. And he got a lot of criticism early on, frankly, for no reason. Because he started as a rookie, he played in the NBA Finals, and he's just grown ever since then. And now this year, he won Rookie of the Year almost unanimously. He received 96% of the first place votes, with Kevin Love only receiving three, and I believe it was D'Anthony Melton receiving the other first place vote, which kind of is a joke to begin with. He should have been unanimous Sixth Man of the Year. But that's besides the point. Tyler Hero, during the regular season, had 20 consecutive 20-plus point games off the bench. He really embraces the role of Sixth Man, like Lou Williams did, like Jamal Crawford did when they were in their primes. And Tyler Hero, everyone, like, he's got a saying that Tyler Hero is a bucket, and he is instant offense for the Miami Heat off the bench. It really takes the pressure off guys like Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Kyle Lowry, when you have a guy scoring 20-plus points off your bench. It allows Jimmy Butler to get some extended rest. It allows Bam Adebayo to get easier shots. Allows Kyle Lowry to get some rest, all of that. You see teams like Boston and the Nets last series really not utilizing the bench and embracing bench depth like the Heat do. Really, no one really embraces the bench depth like Miami, because it seems like Miami can win games with their bench playing the majority of the minutes, and they would be totally okay with that. Because that means Tyler Hero's having a great game. That means Duncan Robinson's having a great game. Victor Oladipo is off the bench now. Cody Martin. They're a very deep team. And Tyler Hero's kind of the anchor of that team. The beginning of the year, Tyler Hero said that he thinks he belongs in the same conversation as guys like Luka Doncic and Trae Young and other guys drafted in that draft class. Zion Williamson. Oh, no. That's not the same draft class. But he wants to be in the same conversation as young, talented guards. RJ Barrett, Luka, Trey. I think they are the same draft class. John Morant, too. No, I've just mixed up multiple draft classes, but that's okay. They're all young. They're all under 25. And Tyler Hero now has an accolade to add to his name, which definitely looks impressive. And I'm not saying he's there, he's not there. But if Tyler Hero can continue to play like how he's playing, he's going to slowly, actually quickly, make his way up the ranks, because you can't fault him for having an offensive game, because he's consistent. Everyone thought that his rookie year would be a fluke, but he's just shown consistent offense. He just needs to work on his defense now. And this series with Philly, he's guarding James Harden and playing him very aggressively. So that's my pick for an underrated guy.
I think that's a great – oh. I was just going to say, I think that's a great pick, and I have to admit, we were talking a little bit about this last night with Mr. Hero. You know, after his performance post-bubble, I was a little skeptical about him, kind of thought there, you know, the potential was fully reached in the bubble, and I don't know, I just didn't expect much, but him getting this accolade is huge, and I think in the next two or three seasons, maybe even sooner, we will see Miami appreciate him more, and we'll hear him talked about, linked to this team more and the success. So I think he's a very solid pick.
Yeah, and I agree with Castle. And I just wanted to, you were right with the draft class. It was the draft class with Zion, Ja, RJ Barrett, because he went 13th to the Heat, right ahead of the Celtics. It's like Romeo Langford.
The man of many hats is back. Well, he never left, so it's good that he can play wear multiple hats at the same time.
Yeah, I never leave the role. It's everywhere.
Your head is growing by the second, and we appreciate that, because if your head wasn't so big, you wouldn't be able to wear all these hats.
This is true. This is the perks of having a big head. I can wear all these hats.
Well, I'm going to ask you one more question. Do you think you could fit another hat while balancing co-host and statistician?
Yeah.
Is it time to talk? It's time to talk some puck, TJ.
Oh boy. I can't wait.
And I think you know where I'm going with this first question.
Yeah.
Your Bruins, the good old Boston Bruins. They're down 2-0 against the Carolina Hurricanes. And there have been times during that the first two games where I've looked and I've said, wow, what happened to the Bruins? Because this isn't the Bruins that I'm used to. It's certainly not the Bruins that you're used to watching. But losing game one, 5-1, game two, 5-2. I guess that means game three, they're going to lose 5-3, and that's improvement. But in all seriousness, what has Boston not done, or what has Carolina done so well that Boston just hasn't been able to adjust to?
Well, I knew coming in that Carolina was going to be a really hard matchup to go against in the first round, let alone any time in the playoffs. I don't think it's anything Carolina's doing, because they're just playing the game that they've played all season long. It's that the Bruins aren't playing their game. They're trying to force too many passes. They're not taking shots. They're trying to force passes for a better look, when in reality, they should be just putting pucks on a rookie goaltender. Defensively, they've been all right in the first couple periods. They let in one, they let in two, they let in two in a row in the first period yesterday, but they came out strong in the second, and it seemed to be like they were going to be all right. They scored a goal, and it looked like there was going to be a comeback afoot, but they just lost it completely in the third period, and that's something that they were doing in the first half of this regular season. They weren't finishing games. They were playing really sloppy hockey, and we can only feel bad for the goaltenders at this point, because they can only do so much when they're not, the Bruins aren't playing solid defense in front of them. And I feel really bad for Ullmark, because he was the stronger goalie going into the playoffs, and the first two games don't reflect that, because again, there's only so much he can do when the Bruins aren't playing good hockey. They aren't playing defense. They're letting Carolina spend way too much time in the offensive zone. The list can go on and on, but I expect some more questions.
Yeah, and even though Castle, he doesn't watch much hockey, I'm sure he can agree, when team is spending the majority of the game in your offensive zone, their offensive zone, your defensive zone, not going to win many hockey games playing basically from behind when you can't get an offensive rhythm. Your goalie is seeing almost 40 shots a night. your offense is just not going to be able to get going that way. Your defense certainly is gone at that point because they're wasting so much energy just on one zone. Boston, it seems like they need to make any line changes, you think, or you think it's more so stick with the line changes and just get back to the basics that really got them here this far into the season?
I think they can take it two ways, and they can take it either way you said. If they keep it with the lines they had all season, then I say get back to basics, play the hard-nosed hockey that you played all season long, and make it tough for your opponent. Your opponent may score goals here and there, but make it tough. That's one thing with the Bruins, and even in the playoffs, they're known for being a really tough opponent. I haven't seen that so far. Even yesterday with the response to the hit on Lindholm, which was questionable in my opinion, they didn't do anything. Yeah, you can shove a guy around all you want, but in a game like in a playoff series this close, especially when you're down in game two and you lose one of your top defensemen, there should be a response for that. I expected something much more than a 2-minute roughing penalty.
Especially when you got a guy like Bergeron who's notorious for being irritant and someone who gets under opponent's skin. And in the playoffs, you would think that he would like to stir the pot a little bit, whether it's when his line or when he's on the bench talking to the opponents. I think Boston is missing that grittiness that teams need in the playoffs. Like the Rangers signing Ryan Reeves. Game one went full nuclear mode with like 20 hits in the first period, it seemed like.
Yeah, and I agree. It's we haven't seen that grit and that toughness from this Bruins team yet so far this postseason. And like I'm confident coming back to the Boston for two games, there's a very good chance they could take advantage of home ice and come away going back to Carolina for game five with a tied series. But it's kind of like you hit the nail on the head where there's no grittiness. They're letting teams kind of skate all over them. They're letting other teams set the tone and kind of just taking the hits, taking the shots, taking any goals that they get scored against them, and they're just not responding. It's kind of like a lack of emotion. There isn't an emotional response in this team yet. Players can say what they want, and coaches can say what they want. Like, oh yeah, it'll be better, but where is that it's going to be better? I haven't seen it yet. And like, I know they're professionals and like this and that, but they got to wake up. That's the bottom line here. And it's not even just Bruins fans feel this way. It's even other fan bases are like, what's going on? And that's how you started it. It's like, what's going on with them?
Yeah. From the few games that I've watched already, it's shocking to me because I've just been used to seeing the tough as nails Boston Bruins, the if you push us, we'll knock you down even harder type of team. And so far, it seems like they've just been getting pushed around and walked over, which I'm not used to it. And I want to say it's refreshing, but it's just odd at the same time. Because I want to get Castle involved, and we'll talk some Rangers in a second. My last question for you is, give me one player that, I mean, I'm sure you can name like 10 that need to step up, but give me one guy that you really are going to lean on to flip that switch in these next two games at home. It's down 2-0, you're coming back to Boston. It's not really panic time, but you need one guy to step up and flip that switch. Who is it?
Defensively, I think they're okay, and they're down Lindholm, but they're good enough on defensively to wrap around that. But I think the person that flipped the switch would be David Pastrnak. He's been the Energizer Bunny kind of all season long. He missed a handful of games here and there, but he's that elite goal scorer that is almost on Ovechkin level of untouchable on the power play. You leave him in open space, he's going to score often enough. I don't know what's going on with him. I know he had a lingering injury, but I think he's got to pot at least one goal, get the monkey off his back, and I think that'll get his head right again, that he can be that elite goal scoring winger and bring that spark to the team. And hopefully if he can do that, then the other lines can produce, they can get shots on goal. Something's got to change, and I think he can help spark that change.
As a hockey fan, I'd love to see it, because nothing beats playoff hockey, nothing beats competitive playoff hockey, which the first two games have lacked. But I'm expecting a different outcome when it comes back to Boston, because you're back on your home ice. You don't want to get embarrassed on your home ice with your fans in the building. So that's a different story. Next week, hopefully we can retouch that, depending on how long the interview with Joe goes. LaCastle, talk to you, because now you're basically an expert with hockey. You watched the Rangers game one, and while it may not have been the results we were hoping for, what did you like from the Rangers? Because there's a lot of good takeaways, a lot of positive takeaways from that game. It's everything you want in a playoff game. It was very physical, very exciting. So what was your biggest takeaway from that game?
I think my biggest takeaway was how well this team was able to keep up. You know, I'm not someone who knows hockey a whole lot. There are some names that I know here and there, but when I look at the Penguins, you know, Crosby, Letang, they're guys that have been with the team for such a long time, and they have so much.
16 years, their core three have been together.
Malkin too, right? He's the third guy.
That's the third one.
Evgeny Malkin, yep. So that's what I'm saying. Like, those are three guys that I know, and that's been the core. And here's a young Rangers team who collectively does not have a whole lot of experience, but yet they were feeding off of the crowd at MSG. The puck control was well, like you said, really aggressive, a lot of hits. They were not afraid to get down and dirty. And I think that sets the tone very well for the first game of the series. And I mean, they were able to, yeah, they lost, but what, they lose in triple overtime? I mean, that's not something to take lightly, especially with a young team. That's something that you'll see with two teams experienced duking it out going back to back. So I think my biggest takeaway is that this Ranger team is not to take lightly, and there's still a lot of gas left in the tank in the series for them.
I hope. The only thing that worries me is, like you said, this was game one. This was triple overtime. Igor Shesterkin, 85 saves in the game one alone. Just think about that and let that process. Igor Shesterkin had 85 saves in game one.
And I guess you'd be able to answer this better than me, but should the defense have allowed that many saves? Should the defense have allowed, you know, I don't, you know.
I mean, that at that point, just how many, that's basically, they basically played two full games worth. Yes, that's a lot of shots. Yes, that's a lot of shots. That's 40 shots, which is a lot. But it's not like that's an uncommon number, because like we said, the Bruins, while they're allowing a lot of shots, 40, it was still 40 shots that their goalie was facing, which it does fall on the defense, but towards the back end of the second, third overtime, when guys have played almost an hour on ice and there's been basically two full hockey games worth, guys are tired. guys are just going to be shooting the puck on net to just end the game then and there, and just didn't happen. So it's kind of a mix of both the defense not playing. I mean, it really isn't the defense's fault because it was still a 3-2 final or a 4-3 final, which isn't that ridiculous. So it, if anything, it, I would fault the offense for not bailing out the defense earlier on, because you're getting so many shots on net. You're putting up 60, 70, 80 shots yourself. Only being able to net three pucks isn't really that good, because percentage wise, that's a very great save percentage for the goalie, especially when they faced the second and then the third string goalie who got replaced due to injury midway through the second overtime. But wow, what a great way to watch your first real playoff game. Was a triple overtime instant classic, I would say.
It definitely, listen, you guys talked it up, and what you guys said was accurate. Playoff hockey, there's nothing like it, and it definitely makes you appreciate the sport more and want to get into the sport more. I mean, these guys, I mean, some of the hits that I see, you don't even see that in football. And I mean, I'm looking at guys on the sideline who have one tooth in the front row of his mouth. You know, these guys are just warriors out here. So it's really, really exciting stuff to watch.
Yeah, there really is nothing like it. TJ, you get a chance to watch that game, or you're too busy upset about the Bruins?
I actually was able to watch the end of first overtime and then majority of the second and half of the third, and then I saw them. I don't know when exactly they scored in the third overtime, but I saw that, and then I was like, all right, I can go to bed.
Yeah, I wish I could have stayed up. I tapped out because just how late it was. I was almost midnight at that point, but I hope that a game like that and a loss specifically like that could really set the tone the rest of the series for the Rangers, because you came so close. And yes, if that were to happen in game seven, it'd be talked about forever and using that fuel to motivate you for next season. But this is game one. There's still a lot of hockey to be played. Penguins need to win three games. We need to win four games. This could still fuel them now. And I'd like to see a more competitive approach from the start, like we saw in game one. The only problem is it faded out very quickly. The second period alone, they allowed almost 30 shots, which is where the Penguins strike. So I'd like to see the Rangers be able to remain physical, but not fizzle out. So I guess if that means toning it down a tad just so they could remain consistent throughout, then so be it. Because I loved how they fed off the crowd energy in game one. You see Ryan Reeves, Lafreniere, Strom, Hedl just throwing their bodies on the line. Every 5 seconds, it was hit, 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 fight, hit, hit. And that's what playoff hockey is. And it was exciting. But then they kind of just got tossed around in the second period and Crosby took over, which the Rangers can't afford to have Crosby take over, because it's over for most teams when that happens.
Well, I'll have you know that at first intermission, the Rangers both outshot and outhit the Penguins, and it's a 1-1 game. Actually, it's the start of the second period, so. Strong start for both teams, but looks like a stronger start so far for the Rangers.
This is true. Can confirm, I am watching the game. So yeah, I mean, obviously we won't be able to give live updates as the show will be, released tomorrow when the game's over, but, yeah, so I mean, we'll have a lot to talk about next week. Like I said, we're going to have Joe Rubeck, LPG coming on. We're very excited about that, and that'll wrap up this week's show. Thank you, TJ, our social media guy, keeping up, some great posts. So make sure you check out the Instagram page at 3 Feet Podcast. We got some good content out there. We got some, we got a hockey post up. Might do a post NFL draft one coming up soon. Who knows? That's TJ's job. So make sure you check that out. Shout out Kevin Wildchat Sports, a great partner of ours. They've got their own content, which is amazing. Doesn't seem like he's been releasing as many podcasts, but he still has articles coming out daily. And they're just pumping out great content on their Instagram page. So you make sure you check them out as well. And as for our sponsors, Liberty Shirt Co., OP Sportsbook, both great sponsors of ours. Liberty Shirt makes the best dress shirts, and OP Sports Betting, they're ramping up and ready to launch. And make sure you check them out, because you could get early access to start betting using crypto in their Discord. So head over to OP Opossum Posse NFT to learn more about that. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Weather is getting nicer, which means more events, whether it's a wedding or a date, Liberty Shirt Co. has you covered. They're offering three shirts for $333. Now, this may seem like a lot, but this is essentially less money than what you would spend on gas in a month, and the shirts will last a long time. And don't forget to use promo code 3P at checkout to save 10% on all other orders. That's promo code 3P at checkout. You save 10% when you go to www.libertyshirtco.com.